Everyone, we're proud to announce that we are going to be a part of the Indianapolis Crime Con this year, held June 9th through the 11th in Indianapolis, Indiana. Besides just us, guests they're going to have there include F. Lee Bailey, John Ronson, an author who wrote a book called The Psychopath Test, which I absolutely love, and the attorney who handled the Stephen Avery case, which is going to be very interesting. So go to crimecon.com to get your weekend passes, and we'll see y'all there.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
We're live here at Yankee Stadium.
You know,
it's pull on your pud day.
Pull on your pud day here at the Squared Circle.
I was so excited to be back in New York. You know what I mean? It's always the same thing. It's like coming over the BQE.
Mm.
You see the skyline
mm-hmm.
is lit up by the moon. The stars are in the sky. And you're just like, oh, this is beautiful. It's like my
gorgeous.
Whole my city.
Right.
Right. Jenny from the block. Henry from the block.
Yeah, it says welcome Henry on the sign.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pull up in front of my apartment building. There's just a big fat man with his pants around his ankles, just pissing all over an empty wheelchair. And
oh,
it's in my head,
that's
it's the first
that's a Brooklyn
time,
fireman.
Yes. It seems like it's the first time it's ever just lucky to not be in the wheelchair.
Yeah. That's
was
very
it,
true.
Was it his wheelchair?
Was it a miracle?
I don't know.
Is that what happened? All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kinsel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hi.
We still introduce him as a guest, even though he's been on 200 episodes.
265, actually.
Right.
265 episodes.
All right, but he's actually in studio. H-Bone.
She's the kind that likes to fuck.
Uh-oh.
The kind that likes to suck. She'll kill your family.
Eileen Wuornos, everyone. That's today's
she's
topic.
She's a lady.
She is a lady.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. She's a lady.
She's our kind of lady.
Talking about Eileen Wuornos.
Indeed.
Well, Eileen Wuornos, lead to her friends, was an American serial killer drifter who murdered 7 men with a .22 pistol in Florida during the late 80s and early 90s. And although she's a lot of times referred to as America's first female serial killer, she's more like the 57th.
Yes.
All right. But that's bad optics.
Yeah, who wants to be the 57th anything?
I'd like to be the 57th man on the Harlem Globetrotters. Where if the whole team dies 5
right.
times over, I get in to start in 5.
Oh, you would be amazing as a Harlem Globetrotter. You'd just be like, come on, shave the boy. You're the boy.
Now, the reason why she got the first female serial killer label was because Eileen was the first high-profile case of a woman who, quote, killed like a man.
She killed like a man.
Yeah, can I still do that bit?
Yeah.
Like a man.
You can do that.
She didn't look like a man.
No. Is that from Mad TV?
Yes. I'm on fire today.
You are on fire. That show was canceled.
Yeah. So was every show I've ever been on.
Stu! Is that Stu?
Now, that whole kill like a man business meant that she wasn't an angel of death or a black widow, which is how we usually think of female serial killers. The killer nurse or the widow.
Oh,
sexy.
Killer. Yeah,
sexy
you just,
female. Yeah. Ooh,
you just got me going on something with killer.
Stirring, yeah.
I didn't realize that was something I had to type into Pornhub. But yeah. Now, killer nurse. And when you think of a black widow killer, you think of like Madeline Kahn. You
yeah.
think of someone who's like gorgeous, wearing black lace.
Sheer clothes.
Yes.
Just like, oh, this being like, I've made your tea as usual, Donald. Melania.
Oh,
Melania's the perfect femme fatale.
She would be the best.
Donald, why do I have to live in this ugly house?
It's the White House. It is the White House.
Why is there a picture of Daniel Day-Lewis here?
That's Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, I'm lost in here.
You are in the...
Where is our simple son?
He's in the toilet.
Good.
According to Peter Vronsky, author of Female Serial Killers, How and Why Women Become Monsters, part of this perception has to do with naming. Male serial killers get violent nicknames like the Hillside Strangler, the Milwaukee Cannibal, and Jack the Ripper. Hmm. Women, on the other hand, get names like Flypaper Lida, Lady Rotten, and the Death Row Granny. Well, two of those names specifically have to do with being sticky.
Right, and that is a terrible way to die, just being stuck to someone forever.
Also, a very insulting thing to say to a woman, and never tell a woman she's being sticky.
I don't even know what that would entail.
But also, Death Row Granny, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, Death Row Granny's real name was Velma Barfield.
Nice.
They could have just called her Velma Barfield.
They could have. My name's Dirtha Split Beef.
And then there's other serial killer names that just play on the crazy cat lady trope, like the Catwoman, the Catnip Slayer, and the Paris Cat Eater.
I don't know if that's got to do with cat ladies. Is that got to do with eating pussy?
I don't.
Right?
There was a special needs person in my hometown who we called the Cat Eater, but it was a man, and he used to do things with cats.
Yeah, I mean, I do call myself a little bit of a cat eater.
Are you? You're inferring that you do.
I've
oral.
Made love to my girlfriend,
and you're proud of this.
Yes.
Good. Now, there were super violent women before Wuornos, but they were mostly either a part of a male-female team like Carla Homolka or Mira Hindley, or Nazis like Irma Gressa, a.k.a. the Beast of Belzen.
Never look up sexy, famous Nazis.
No,
last night I had a couple of beers and I was sitting in the room. I was just like, because I was trying to remember the name of the sexy female Nazi.
Ilsa Koch.
That's her name. Yeah. Because I was looking up and I was getting a lot of conflicting imagery.
Well, then never watch Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS.
I think I have to.
No, Wuornos, she was special in that she was solo. There were no relational excuses with her. She was not being controlled by men, nor was she, quote, just taking orders. She only existed in her own world, and much like Henry Lee Lucas, that was the world of the Drifter.
This is an important consideration with Eileen Wuornos. She is not just the first famous female serial killer. She is a big-time drifter killer, and drifter killers are something else.
Yeah. Number one drifter killer.
It takes a lot of self-reliance, that's for sure. I got lost the other day, and I got into the fetal position, and I started crying.
Yeah. This is a pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of serial killer.
I'm a huge man, and I couldn't deal with just like, I'm on the wrong street.
And we're going to go ahead and be good third wave feminists here and say that Eileen Wuornos was a drifter first and a woman second.
Because you're always a drifter first. Yes. It is not about gender when it comes to being a drifter. A drifter means you have no home. You have no base. You have no anchoring. You're around doing whatever it is you want. And it also means, for the most part, you're completely full of shit.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta be. You have to survive.
Yeah, Eileen Wuornos is just a person. She's capable of just as much evil as a man is. Mm-hmm. Now, throughout most of...
That's great.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
She is.
You're welcome. Now, throughout most of her life, Eileen Wuornos robbed, beat, cheated, and eventually murdered her way across America, although her finest drifting work and all of her murdering was done in the drifter mecca of Florida.
No, the perfect stool for drifter bullshit.
It really is the drifter mecca.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole said that the Hand of Death was based in the Everglades.
Oh, so like you're in L.A., that's technically beautiful, California, but is it too nice to be a drifter?
Yeah.
You got to find the middle ground, which is Florida.
What you need is highway systems with good walking sides to it.
Right, yes.
L.A., it's all concrete freeways. Very difficult to actually walk the highway.
Those are not thumbing roads.
Yes, they're not thumbing roads. Florida highways are flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can just roll in from a swamp, literally covered in snakes, and go to the side of the road and be like, I'll kill ya. I mean, take a ride from you, and they're like, you're always being funny, you drifters.
And then in the 60s and the 70s, Florida's state model was drifters welcome.
And like most drifters, and definitely like all drifter serial killers, Eileen Wuornos had a terrible, horrific childhood on par with that of Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole, her spiritual brethren. Now, while we can have sympathy for these people, as always, remember that they are murderers. There is no excuse for the willful taking of human life for your own profit, no matter what circumstances you may have grown up in.
Unless it is to win a Best Comedy Podcast Award for the Webbies.
Webby Awards.
I will kill to win.
Please go to twitter.com/LP on the left for a pinned tweet to vote for us for Best Comedy Podcast. Now, with this whole murdering thing, once you cross that line, you are done. And Eileen Wuornos crossed that line 7 times before she was caught. Even if you believe the first one was in self-defense, there were still 6 others afterwards that Eileen Wuornos used and threw away like a cigarette, not only because she was making money each time, but because she obviously liked it.
I still view Eileen Wuornos as the last bastion of the Wild West villain. She really fashioned herself like a new proto Billy the Kid type that was just like robbing and murdering out on the road. She didn't have anywhere to be. She rolled around like a tumbleweed with breasts.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's tough to tumble.
But again, like all drifter killers, all of her stories are from her. We don't know. There's nobody to corroborate any evidence of what she's done, or there's no, she had no family. She had no real connections until later on during the murders.
Yeah.
So what we're going to find is it's, again, with drifters, they build their own folklore. They build their own idea and make a legend of themselves.
They build their own mythos.
Yeah.
Mythos. I liked what you called her the other day, Henry, Yosemite Samantha.
Yeah.
that is kind of what she was.
Yeah, and she was also a pretty hardcore narcissist, so it's always about her.
Yes.
I mean, the entire world revolves around Eileen Wuornos, and when she talks about her crimes, she talks about it just so flippantly, like not necessarily the murders, but when she talks about like robbery and assault, she calls it like the Robin Biz,
which is kind of fun.
Yeah,
and it is, I guess, in her mind, it was a business.
Yeah,
it is a business. That's how she made her money.
Yeah,
that and giving the old tug and jump.
I mean, that's where she made most of her money.
And, you know, she just wasn't she did not have the family structure to go to Wall Street, which is also the Robin business, but we make those people
Robin
presidents.
Now, Eileen Carol Wuornos was born in a suburb of Detroit on Leap Day 1956 to Leo Pittman and Diane Wuornos, who were both teenagers at the time. Eileen was the youngest of two, with her older brother Keith being born the year before in 1955 when Eileen's mother was just 15.
Now, I have a question about a Leap Day birth.
Uh-huh.
So now, these only come around every 4 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are you younger than everybody else?
I think technically she was executed at the age of 12.
That's inappropriate then. I think that's kind of the key to eternal youth. Never celebrate a birthday.
Never celebrate a birthday.
Birthdays are for the dying. Funerals are for the living.
You're really getting it, Marcus.
He's starting to understand.
Now, remember that sociopaths are neither made nor born. It's more of a combination of the two. And Eileen definitely had both the upbringing and the genetics to make her a serial killer. Mm. Eileen's father was known to beat the grandmother who raised him whenever he pleased, and he would tie cats together by the tail and throw them over a clothesline to watch him fight it out.
Hey, Lee, come over here. You want to watch old daddy make the family pets a bolo?
That is, so as drug dealers throw shoelaces over the cords to let people know there's cocaine or weed there, is that just like, there's poo-poo in our toilet? Like, what? Why? That's a bad sign.
I hate it when they put these Christmas decorations up early. They're so loud. I cannot sleep. I can't believe this starting. It is not even Halloween.
But worst of all, while Eileen's mother was pregnant with her, Leo Pittman was sent to prison for the rape and attempted murder of a 7-year-old girl. No. This guy was a textbook sociopath. Now, thankfully, Leo Pittman hung himself in prison in 1959. But that's not to say Diane was parent of the year either. Eileen and Keith were usually left screaming and crying alone with no one to care for them, which we see a lot in serial killers like Kennifer Bianchi and, again, Henry Lee Lucas. See, when a kid doesn't get any love from anyone in the first 3 years of their life, an attachment disorder can develop in which they are incapable of forming normal relationships later on, which fit Eileen to a T until she met her very own Otis Toole in the mid-80s, who we'll be discussing later.
And if you want to see an example, this is just sad. Watch it's on Netflix. It's a video about Russian adoption.
Oh, God.
These kids,
are you watching that?
If my heart doesn't break 3 times a day, I don't get to live. It's a curse.
Wait, in Russia,
that's what made me 6'7".
Do they just have like a big kid and cut him in half and there's a smaller kid inside that kid and they cut that kid in half and there's a smaller kid inside that kid?
Basically. And then they send them over to somebody here in Pittsburgh because they got bait and switched.
Why
when they
did someone send me all these dead kids?
I don't know.
Well, they've been doing this for 20, 30 years. Yeah. I remember we covered this in high school during debate class. What they do in Russia is these kids just kind of get thrown into these gigantic group homes, these orphanages, and they get absolutely no affection whatsoever, no attachment, and then they get sent to America, and they're nightmares.
They're sociopaths.
It's a hard knock life for us. It's hard knock life.
That sounds like fun.
But anyway,
bopping all the time, singing songs. You wear brushes on your shoes, cleaning the floors.
It's not a musical. They never sing. They're not allowed to talk.
Well, technically, the last number is always they turn into the two kids, one hammer kids.
Oh, my God.
Which is always bad.
Oh, brutal.
So in 1960, Diane Wuornos dropped both their kids off at her parents' place, and disappeared forever. This left Eileen and Keith in the care of Lowry and Britta Warnos, who raised them as their own children, along with their other two natural borns.
Same thing with Jack Nicholson.
Really?
Yep. What? So sometimes these people do turn out good.
Yeah, that guy from The Shining?
That guy from The Shining? You mean acting legend Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, he's not.
I call him that guy from The Shining or The Joker.
That's also, yeah, legend. Acting legend.
Yeah, he's acting. He's not actually Jack Torrance.
That's how you know he's a good actor. He's that also, you think that he's Jack Torrance.
Is he also the fat guy who eats the sandwiches on the yachts?
Now he is. That's the current role he's playing with his life.
Eileen would not find out that her parents were not her own until about the age of 11, and it was not a happy childhood leading up to that. When Eileen acted up, her grandfather would beat her with a belt. And we're not talking like regular early 60s type beating that was just kind of socially acceptable. This is bearskin, black belt, leaving bruises and welts type of beatings. Like, these were absolutely brutal. And there is actually corroboration on this one, as Eileen's childhood friend Don Bockens witnessed it happening many times. See, Don Bockens actually stayed friends with Eileen throughout her life, and Eileen's letters to Don would be collected in the book Dear Don, which we'll be hearing excerpts from later.
So her father, I'm going to do a sports reference, so I do want to let everybody know that's about to happen.
Thank you for clearing the air.
He was a more violent, much whiter Adrian Peterson.
Okay.
He is a running back. He is one of the best running backs in the history of the NFL who beat his son.
Yeah, but did that just to make him a better football player?
No, it actually kind of ruined his whole career.
Yeah, of course it did. Okay. Well, it's a great joke.
It was just a reference.
I'm sure many of our more sports-inclined fans out there love that
joke. I'm sure they laughed and they slapped their knee for 1 second, not hitting their family.
Adrian Peterson.
I thought of Scott Peterson.
No, it's not.
Now, the book Dear Don that came out is also very controversial in my eyes. Because number one, it's our main source of information about Eileen's past is that it's her letters and the stuff that she said in various interviews leading up to. Again, so we don't know what's real and what's not real. We do know that the grandfather and the bad shit that was happening in her house definitely was real because Don corroborated in the book.
Yeah.
But the book starts off as like a super like feminist kind of like stancing type thing.
Yeah. Well, the intro is written by this one. Her last name is Chesler, and she's one of those like second wave feminists who think that men are scum. Every man is evil.
We're not good.
Well, nobody's
good. Some are good.
People suck in general. Like, it's just how it is.
Pope Francis, people like him.
Fuck Pope Francis.
I don't like him, but Francis could
go fuck himself. Yeah, he's lying. He's double deep lying.
But Chesler was the one who first put forth the idea of Eileen Wuornos as a hero.
Yes, but then you get to the letters, and they'll be like, I'll snap a dick off with my bottom hole. You know, it's all just about her killing stuff, and then also about how her favorite band is REO Speedwagon. She writes for many letters about how REO Speedwagon's her favorite band.
They just have one song. Don't they?
I mean, they've got a default canon of songs.
No, I know they have. They have more than one, but they have one successful song, isn't it?
Yeah. What is it?
Gotcha.
You know what? Don't even worry about it.
Can't fight this feeling anymore.
Is it Carry On My Wayward?
Can't fight this feeling anymore.
Now, Eileen suffered other forms of abuse as well in the psychological form. Her grandparents' natural kids were treated fairly well, but for some reason, Eileen was never allowed to receive Christmas presents and was once forced to watch as her grandfather drowned a cat she had been told she couldn't keep.
All right, this is a horrible man. And this is all part as we talk about the serial killer soup.
Yeah, it's all starting to come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as the grandmother went, she was a useless alcoholic, just looked on saying nothing while all this abuse occurred. And Eileen held it all together until about the age of 8 when she started acting out in school. Now, while her functional IQ was about average, her verbal IQ sat about 20 points lower, and this got no better throughout her life.
Almost like she was a 4-year-old? Like a leap year birth? This is all coming together.
Yes.
Well, my girlfriend Carolina, she works with kids, and we were watching some interviews with Eileen Wuornos, and Eileen Wuornos was telling a story, and Carolina actually pointed out, like, she speaks like a child. Like, when she tells stories, she has a cadence like a child like that. And then, And she also just has a very rich, like, kind of fantasy world. Hmm. She can't really tell what's real and what's not. And you really see that later on in her life. But a lot of serial killers, like, they have a very rich fantasy world. Like, Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, had Infinity Land when he was a kid.
Yeah, which would have been an incredible recording studio name.
That would have been amazing. You can start recording, but you can never stop. Continue. Or an amusement park with the world's longest log ride.
And it's just him. Yeah, it's a log ride that's just shaped like a dead Filipino boy, but you have to ride, like, face down on it, chest to chest with it.
I'm soaking wet with water after that ride.
Is this water?
That's... You look like a cinnamon bun.
Oh, man. It's thicker. But it's kind of like I have a high... alien UFO knowledge IQ and a low emotional IQ for speaking to people at the bank.
You have a low tolerance for bullshit.
Yeah, too real to be your friend.
Well, with a lot of serial killers who have this, like, really rich fantasy world, what happens when they're kids, when they have, like, these horrific childhoods, the fantasy world and the violent fantasies they have, they get intrinsically linked, and those violent fantasies never really go away. And until finally one day that fantasy becomes a reality.
And we talk about all the time, like, about how serial killers then edge. They do the thing where they slowly but surely create the circumstances where they will start killing, where they want to get there.
Yeah.
And I think Eileen was kind of obviously sexually assaulted, obviously had to deal with a lot of horseshit growing up, and started learning, she started to see how I could get some positive, quote-unquote positive validation from doing bad shit.
Yeah. Now, because there was such a large gap in her cognitive and verbal skills, Eileen, she'd get easily frustrated, and she developed a hair-trigger temper that she would never be able to control. See, if you watch the documentary The Life and Death of a Serial Killer, you can see her temper on display again and again. When the documentary maker says something she doesn't like, just something switches in her brain, her eyes bug out of her head, and it is not hard to imagine that that bug-eyed face would be the last one you see before she pulls a gun and shoots your ass.
She reminds me, I'm not going to completely say of my mom, but it is that, you know, bit. It's like that look. They always say, like, the look. Like, my mom, it's a bit, a famous bit in many, many various family-friendly stand-up bits.
Absolutely.
But it is like that, where it is, she is very frightening.
Yeah, but then it seems like she could just flip it right back into just being like, okay, see you later.
She absolutely can, because there is actually, like, one part where she is, like, really railing at this guy and yelling, like, they're daring me to kill again. And then a couple of minutes later, she's like, okay, bye.
Good to see you. Bye. Give hugs. Hugs. Yeah, I'm a hugger.
She would say that a lot. I'm a hugger.
That is horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, from a young age, she was horrendously difficult to get along with, which isolated her, which made her angry, which isolated her even further. And as far as learning in school went, she was diagnosed with hearing and vision problems, but her grandmother just didn't give a shit. She blamed all of Eileen's problems on just, quote, not paying attention.
You know what she needed? A Michelle Pfeiffer. She needed a hero teacher. And I'm actually saying,
most of her life living in a drifter's paradise.
Churning up the butter?
That's Weird Al.
No, really, Eileen Wuornos, like, you really wonder what would have happened if only somebody would have given a fuck at one point in her life. You know, and that really, that's a lot of serial killers.
Also, so I find it very interesting to note that the main problem they find, they say that if the reason why you're not making it up the bridge is not paying attention, it's MUs. It's true. It's having too steep a gradient.
Yeah. Scientology didn't help.
Did you just sneak in Scientology?
Yes.
You are never allowed to read Dianetics ever again. L. Ron Hubbard, he died.
I know he died.
And so don't talk about him. I'm very worried about you.
I have wired Scientology words and terms into my brain. You did this.
Dude, if...
No, don't point at me.
I didn't do anything. You've been bitching at us to do a Scientology episode for years.
Yes.
If you become a Scientologist, your head is in the toilet.
No. I don't like the dictionary enough.
Now, Eileen went back and forth as to whether her grandfather sexually abused her or not, but her behavior starting at around the same time she found out her grandparents weren't actually her real parents points to a resounding yes, he did, or at least someone did.
Yeah.
At around 11, Eileen started taking boys out into the woods to trade sexual favors for cigarettes, which earned her the horrific nickname Cigarette Pig.
It's a great nickname if you're, like, in a frat in college.
I am pretty certain that was a nickname of mine. Fairly certain.
Ben Cigarette Pig Kissel?
Yeah.
Why do they call you Cigarette Pig?
Look at him. You know, Especially back in the day, the old fat pictures of him. Him with this thing of Marlboros hanging out of his sleeve. He's definitely a cigarette. Yeah. Big pig.
Bigger than a pig, yeah.
Now, more than a few boys later said they lost their virginity to her out in the woods, sometimes five or six at a time.
Also Kissel in college.
Yeah. I took a lot of boys out to the woods.
And many of them said that when Eileen would try to take one of those sexual relationships public, the boys would either pretend they never met her or would viciously reject her. Mm. And this is something you see in childhood sexual abuse victims quite a bit.
Like, she obviously, I think she had to have been sexually
assaulted. She was obvious that she had to have been sexually assaulted, like, because they start using sex as a kind of validation, a kind of currency.
Because their whole idea of affection has been corrupted by somebody that you trust most of the time. It's normally it's somebody that you trust came in, destroyed your idea of connection, because now you view this is like a dirty thing, because they make the sex thing, they make your sexuality is a dirty secret thing, and now you could have to use it as a weapon almost. And also it's like a weird way, it's like, this is how I get my grandfather's attention.
Yeah.
And this is now how I will get the neighborhood's attention.
It's very bizarre. I mean, being taking in foster kids, many of them had sexual abuse, and you can tell. I mean, it is the worst thing you can do to a child.
It robs you of everything.
It really does.
Cores you out as a person. I saw the kids, I mean, honestly, I do talking the bit about how I was the only boy in the altar boy crew to not be molested. All the rest of them, you can't find them on Facebook. Mm. And I don't know if that just straight up means they're dead or they're just not around. Like, they're just not around.
Well, I mean, you can come back from it. Plenty of people
of course
come.
Yeah,
plenty of people come back from childhood sexual abuse.
It takes a lot of work.
It takes a ton of work, but a lot of people don't. You can't
graduate to being a drifter killer and expect to make the proper work.
No, you're not going to find a good trucker counselor.
Just need to drive more.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's what I do every single time I have a problem. I leave it in another city.
I do miss, like, what was it, the 80s where trucking was cool?
It is cool.
I love a truck driver. My father was a truck driver.
More the 70s. I mean, you had like truck driving hits. I've actually got a pretty good collection of cassette tapes that are all collections of country songs about trucking that you could buy at truck stops. I've got like 6 volumes, and it's just two sides of nothing but trucking songs.
Convoy.
Yeah, 6 days on the road, 18 wheels and a dozen roses.
So they're actually songs about trucking.
No, yeah. It is literally.
It's not like knockoff Lynyrd Skynyrd songs.
It is 6 volumes of nothing but trucking songs.
Driving about songs about songs about driving.
Interesting. So right from Wheels on a Bus to 18 Wheels.
Actually, 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses by Kathy Mattea is a beautiful song. It's actually one of my favorite songs.
4 more miles.
Don't say, okay, that's fine.
On a 10-day ride.
It's just all shitty versions of Turn the Page.
At 14, Wuornos got pregnant. No one knows for sure who the father was, but the rumor put the child to Chief, the local pedophile.
I don't understand how they have a local pedophile. How isn't there a local sheriff that arrests the local
pedophile? You didn't grow up in a small town.
Yeah, it's definitely.
It wasn't that big.
I'll tell you what, it's not a voluntary position.
You were told
you were the town pedophile.
You're knighted the
you
town
just, No, no. I mean, it's an unofficial ceremony.
Oh, I see.
It's really weird sometimes in these, because she grew up in like a small suburb. It is really weird sometimes, you know, and I had that too when I was a kid, is that there was the guy that, like, everyone knows that dude is a pedophile.
Because he's always fiddling.
He's fiddling about.
And he's doing the same thing, the Albert Fish thing. It's like any man over the age of 19 wearing overalls with no clothes on underneath it is the local pedophile, or he's mentally handicapped and living in a shack.
Yep.
Now, according to other kids, this guy, Chief, the local pedophile, he used to peel the shells off chicken eggs just before the chicks were ready to hatch, just so he could watch them die.
And he's the Treasury Secretary now.
Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, Treasury Secretary.
Treasury Secretary.
For the duration of the pregnancy, Eileen was sent to the Florence Crittenton Home for Unwed Mothers and gave birth to a boy she named Keith after her brother. And speaking of her brother, Eileen claimed that she had a
sexual relationship with her brother, but with all things Eileen, that's got to be taken with a grain of salt. No one else corroborated that, and that's also something that she went back and forth on.
Do you think she fucked her brother?
I'm really not sure. I mean, it's definitely possible, but it could be one of those things where she just says as many fucked up things as she possibly can just to get a rise.
But we don't know who the father of this child is.
No.
Is it possible she named it Keith because Keith is the father?
I think Keith is just the only male name she can remotely stand.
Yeah. Now, the baby was given up for adoption, and Eileen returned to Michigan where her grandfather, Lowry, kicked her out of the house as soon as she got back. And Eileen then lived in the woods at the end of the street, left to fend for herself in the Michigan winters.
Her having that kid was kind of like the kickoff to her whole life. That was the first but biggest, like, getting kicked out of the house that, like, changed her.
Mm-hmm.
Because now she knows, like, once she learns that I can go into the woods of fucking Michigan and live and survive and figure it out, she starts now being like, okay, I have all the tools I need. I can just take my show on the road. Also, she got a lot of positive attention from being pregnant. I think that when she finally went to the hospital and they were like, finally actually caring for her.
Right.
I bet you that time when she was pregnant was one of the most pleasant stretches of time she had.
Well, she got sent to one of those homes for unwed mothers. And I don't know, some of them are very nice. I don't know how nice. I mean, the Florence Crittenton homes are still around to this day.
Yeah. So they just like slapping her belly being like, get out of it, get out. Like, is it that bad?
I don't know.
Well, I know she gave birth, she saw the child once, and then it was given up for adoption.
Damn.
Okay.
Yeah. But when she got back living in the woods, she still had friends. She still hung out because it wasn't like she went out like 6 miles outside of town and was living like a little shanty out there. It was the woods at the end of her street. This was like before urban sprawl. So like, you know, you had suburbs where cities would just suddenly end and then it's just the woods. So she went down to the end of her street and just lived in the woods. And she would actually, there were other kids living in the woods. Like there was an interview, the guy that said that he saw the local pedophile peel the chicken eggs. Mm-hmm. That guy, he was like some poor like gay kid who got kicked out of his house and he made a little fort out of tree stumps and lived out there with her.
If they were animated characters, this is fun.
Peter Pan is
actually a pedophile.
This is
Heathcliff in practice.
And she's Heathcliff. Cool.
But then she would drive, because you can imagine, because literally, it's the grandparents are like pulling into the house, like driving back and forth from the store, and just seeing Eileen living in the streets.
Yeah.
Down the street from the house, being like, and her like just giving them a middle finger as they just drive past you. It's a very strange existence. It's also what a good Christian establishment all of this shit is, because it's like literally people just like seeing problems and ignoring them
everywhere.
Like, above them.
Yeah. I mean, the most that people would help her out is like some of them would have, you know, car, like abandoned cars in their yard, you know, up on blocks, and they're like, yeah, you can sleep in there tonight. And that's when she was lucky. When she was lucky, she'd have an abandoned car to sleep in. Sometimes she would have a blanket, sometimes not.
Well, we've done our Christian duty. We're letting her sleep in the blown out Cadillac.
But don't worry, I pulled out the air freshener so it smells like my old ass.
That's about right.
But like I said, she still had friends. This is one of her childhood friends talking about all the shit they used to get into together.
And he lived right here, and they were druggies also. We used to hang together and go over there and smoke pot and do whatnot and getting all kinds of shit.
But lots of different drugs.
Yes, lots of pills, actually.
Pills.
LSD, mescaline, bladder acid.
Yes.
She's like Eugene Levy's wife from Best in Show. Was it Catherine O'Hara character? Mm-hmm. She's so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And her body language on that is great. Like her eyes bug out, her head goes back, she leans over to the side like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what it is too? You know, real drug users, not us. We dabble. Real drug users call it mescaline.
Mescaline?
Yes, because that's like a Hunter S. Thompson term.
If you can lean, you can do mescaline. Because you got time to lean, you got time for
leaning.
Mescaline.
Yes.
Eileen kept attending school briefly until she quit her freshman year. Here's how it all went down, according to a letter she wrote to Dawn. And this is a very special presentation here.
Now, we felt that maybe it was inappropriate for me to play Eileen Wuornos as I normally would with our main characters in our series, but what we decided to do is toss the rock to my bloodline, Jackie Zabrowski.
Ooh, Jackie Zabrowski.
Here she is.
Can you remember time? Do you remember the fight me and greasy-haired Penny Dole and I had at the front steps of Troy Union Grade School? Do you remember when Lori and Ducky got in that car accident? Do you remember a guy with real long jet black hair named Black Sheep at the high school? Well, one day him and I, we went underneath the stairwell near the new section they built. You had the swinging doors that head outside. Once he hit the bottom of the steps, well, he had a four-finger lid of Acapulco gold. We went under there to roll a big one, smoke it right there. We heard footsteps coming down, but we figured it was just another kid on his way out to somewheres. So we finished rolling it, started to light it, and lo and behold, it was the principal. He looked at us both and said, "Report to my office now." Black Sheep gave me the lid, and he started up the stairs. I said to the principal, "Bullshit! I ain't going nowhere. Matter of fact, I quit school. Right now." He said, "Well, then you get off these school grounds right now, Wuornos. And if I ever see you on them again, I'll call the police. You understand?" I walked out the double doors with a pot. And that was the day I quit school. What was really strange was that the principal knew I wasn't living at home, but in the woods. Well, I guess he admired me for having the guts to still go to school as a runaway, living in the woods near your house. A trip, huh? Well, last page, gotta close her up. Take care, Dawn. I'm still surviving. A little crazy, but still coming through. For now, lovely.
Whatever happened to the bad girl from the Breakfast Club?
This is that. This is the end result of the bad girl from the Breakfast Club. This is also if the Breakfast Club was just all homeless people.
Yes. Interesting.
I mean, she's got that manic energy of somebody. Because, you know, someone will tell you that story because it's actually a very sad story.
It's
her quitting school. It's pretty much, that's the story of her dropping out of life.
Right. Yeah.
And her, in the beginning of her just becoming a drifter until she was finally caught for murder. But she tells it like it is the funniest, most fun thing you ever heard. You just kind of have to sit there like, wow, yeah, you are a badass.
But it's really not that. I mean, my friend did the exact same thing, but he had parents who were just like, "No, you're going back to school." She just needed a safety net.
But she just needed
anything. She had the woods.
She needed any sort of support system whatsoever, and she had none. She did flip and reverse it to being super proud.
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
She loved it. She loved the fact that, and it was true. Like we were talking about when we were like talking with Jackie about the letters about how she truly did was like. And, like, I think that he did admire me for still going to school even though I was homeless. Like, it was like, that's not true. It's like, he didn't admire you. He's probably very concerned about you.
It's actually, well, I don't think he was concerned enough about her. And it is admirable to be homeless and go to school.
Yeah. I mean
no one, the fact that she survived until freshman year, ninth grade, is impressive.
I mean, I know, like, I've heard stories from listeners out there who've done that exact same thing. I mean, we've had people out there that were actually homeless.
Yep.
And then got out of it.
And they figured out their shit.
Yeah, they figured out their shit, and you know, because I think there's a lot of people out there, and I know this because we have gotten letters from people who listen to the childhood stories of serial killers, and they write to us, say like, "Man, like I get it, I was there, but you know what? I didn't become a serial killer
because there
are hundreds of thousands of people out there who had the exact same childhood as Eileen Wuornos or Henry Lee Lucas or John Wayne Gacy, and you know what? They don't fucking kill anybody, and a lot of them actually turn out to be pretty fantastic people because they've had to have the strength to actually get through all of this shit.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Now, when Eileen was 15, her grandmother, Britta, died of cirrhosis of the liver. Eileen showed up at the funeral in jeans, walked up to the coffin, lit a cigarette, and blew smoke in her dead grandmother's face.
See, that's pretty cool.
It is kind of cool.
So far, I'm kind of best friends with her because I was best friends with people that did this exact same stuff.
Yeah. Right now, this is the beginning to an incredible Susan Sarandon movie.
Yeah.
Needless to say, she was kicked out of the funeral, but not before she inexplicably switched out the signs on the men's and women's restrooms. It's just a fun little funeral goof.
That is funny.
Now that go in there, you could just see grandma taking a shit. Isn't that
weird.
Funny?
In the urinal?
Oh, yeah.
It says women's.
This is a funny... This must be one of these new Asian toilets. It's Asian. Oh, I got all sorts of Duke in my heels.
Oh, my...
Arnie's gonna hate this.
So with the only person who even came close to being a caregiver now dead, Eileen began her lifelong career as a drifter of the roadside hitchhiking prostitute variety. Ironically, the same career as many serial killer victims.
That's kind of why she works as a feminist icon. The idea is she's flipping it. It's Batman. It's become the thing that everyone fears.
Yeah.
But she's still a fucking murderer.
Yes, I mean, yes.
Yeah, she's always remember that she is a murderer. But...
Yeah, well, Batman's also a murderer.
Batman doesn't kill.
He did not kill.
Yeah, okay, watch the movie. Do you remember when he's on his little motorcycle bike and then traffic, he destroys all the cars?
Well, that's why a lot of people don't like the movie. The real Batman would not kill people.
He does not kill. That is not direct kills, that is collateral damage. And guess what? What we all know, what is our government has taught us again and again, to make an omelet, sometimes you got to burn a couple of villages.
Yeah, apparently. Adam West, he's my Batman.
Yeah?
He killed me with charm and kind of being fat. I like that when men could kind of be fat.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, George Reeves, the original Superman, he was actually a fat man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he could still fly.
Taft.
He did not fly.
No.
No.
Well, yeah, I mean, she did have the same career as a lot of serial killer victims, but that really does show you how fucking tough Eileen Wuornos actually was. She survived that life for 15 years before finally going down for murder, but that's not to say she didn't get into plenty of drifter trouble along the way.
Put in your 18-wheel CD. We're about to go trucking.
CD, motherfucker, I got a tape deck.
Oh.
Convoy. I just like saying convoy.
It is fun.
In May of 1974, Eileen was arrested in Colorado for DUI, disorderly conduct, and to start discharging a weapon from a moving vehicle, but she skipped town before she did any time. Now, in a letter Wuornos wrote to Dawn years later, she said that at about this time, Eileen found a decapitated and dismembered torso of a young girl under a bridge off I-80 right outside of Chicago. And Eileen said that when she attempted to report it to a truck driver, the guy couldn't give less of a fuck and just drove off.
So, nurse, you got to finally meet my wife, Lisa.
Seems like you did it.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I'd never report any corpses
guilty
on the side.
As a judge.
Yeah. Truckers they're always the one that left the body.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why the American highway system has been littered with bodies for decades.
And big jugs of piss.
Gatorade bottles, that is not, you know, jumping yellow. That is urine.
Now, although there is more than a decade between this supposed incident and the murders, it could show some insight into the paranoia that could have driven Eileen to kill if these were the types of memories that were swirling around in her head. On the other hand, it could also show her talent for making up stories that justify her actions, and this is the dilemma of Eileen Wuornos. If you believe this version, then she was the victim of a world that didn't care about people like her, and so she was fighting back as an avenger on the side of other prostitutes who were the victims of so many serial killers throughout the years. But if you believe other versions of the story she's told, then there exists in the world terrible people that can kill multiple victims in cold blood for a little pocket change and a couple days joyride in a car who then lie about it to try and save her own ass. If we've learned anything, however, about drifters in our time here on Last Podcast, the latter explanation is a hell of a lot more likely.
I gotta say, Jumpin' Yellow also sounds like a great name for a knockoff Gatorade.
Yes.
And if she was an actual Avenger, like next to Hawkeye and Captain America, that would be fun.
They call me the Gulch Filler.
No, that's another.
If you would actually like to read a comic book that it would kind of be like what if Eileen Wuornos was in an Avenger or in the Justice League, read The Pro by Garth Ennis. It is fucking hilarious and amazing.
Okay. But,
and again, this is what makes her truly a drifter killer.
Yeah.
Drifter killers are full of shit. They're always lying. It's always they're always telling bullshit in order to exploit vulnerabilities. Like Henry Lee Lucas, but he was lying in order to show people like he knew he was getting better treatment because he would lie about the many fake victims that he did in order to get out of jail and go show them quote unquote bodies and do all of this shit. So it's like you get a lot of stuff for your lies.
Right. Yeah. And your father saw him doing that, didn't he?
Yeah, he actually did in Colorado City, Texas. You know, my dad actually did see like Henry Lee Lucas out on one of his little outings. My dad was eating in a diner and they brought in Henry Lee Lucas to have a burger. You know, whereas most other murderers and drifter killers are rotten in jail, Henry Lee Lucas was able to lie his way into road trips.
And that's how powerful lying is. Look at our fucking president.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so powerful. It's chaos magic.
Every president in history. Every politician ever.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Eileen's 20th year, her grandfather committed suicide by gassing himself in his garage by closing the door and letting his car engine run. Mm. But Eileen did not attend that funeral, even to say fuck you one last time.
Man, that must have been a happy trip to the garage.
Yeah. I was definitely thinking about farting. but then it's not.
Gassing himself. No, it's car exhaust. It's carbon monoxide poisoning.
But look what happened to the guy from Office Space.
You're just saying like a funny
thing. He made $1 million.
It's a jump to conclusions, Matt.
A few months later, Eileen was arrested for knocking out a bartender by throwing a cue ball at his head. 4 days after that arrest, her brother Keith died of cancer, leaving her a life insurance policy of $10,000.
I read a very brutally sad letter in Dear Dawn of Aileen talking about going to visit her brother in hospice, and it was her showing up, and it's just, of course, delusional, because in her eyes, she's a hero.
Yeah.
But she showed up trying to bring Keith whiskey while he was in the hospital bed.
And she was wasted as well.
She was all fucked up. She rolled in, like, to being like, and they're like, and they kicked me out because they didn't want me to be a part of his life, and like this like whole like long thing. And I was like, no, man, you just brought a whole... you was chain-smoking in a hospice room, dumping whiskey all over your dying brother that you were probably also telling everybody you used to fuck.
Yeah.
That's how people like this are, is that they show up drunk like it's something cute. Like, oh, you know, I was wasted, but, you know, I don't know why that should matter.
She's like Anne Hathaway in that movie.
Which movie?
Where
Which
she's a drunk. What's the movie? I don't know. The listeners know what I'm talking about.
Princess Diaries? Yes.
No, it's not Princess Diaries. She was far too sober in that.
Now, that $10,000 that she got from her brother, the life insurance policy, this was a huge chance for Eileen to turn her life around. I mean, $10,000 in 1974 money, that is over $50,000 in today's cash.
Enough to jumpstart a small business.
Gone in 2 months.
Damn.
And a lot of that money she spent on a luxury car that she wrecked beyond repair pretty soon after buying it.
I was reading a story recently about Ozzy Osbourne doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, but he had a whole bunch of money to back it up, and then everything was fine because Sharon took care of him.
He had a safety net.
Now, eventually, Eileen made her way down to Florida. There, she got picked up by a wealthy retiree and yacht club president named Louis Fell, 49 years older than the 20-year-old Warnos.
Ooh.
The two got hitched. Fell announced the marriage in the local society papers because he was very proud of his 20 years. Because at this point, Eileen Warnos was still, she had a cuteness about her.
Everybody get around. Get around. This is my precious new wife, Eileen.
Get around. The yacht tub president's going to speak, everyone.
Gather around. There's nothing I love better than my sweet, sweet new wife, Eileen. She's got a beautiful smile in them eyes. Black. Like a doll's eyes.
Yacht club president, everybody. The yacht club president, yeah.
Well, Eileen took Fell back up to Mission to show off both him and her new engagement ring because this guy was loaded. But soon that drifter lifestyle came back a-calling.
I told me you go out there and you find yourself a wife. And I said, I'll go find a wife and I'll bring her back. The head, the tail, the whole damn thing. Black eyes rolling back. Beautiful, beautiful. When 100 men went in, 10 men came out.
Sir, that's your Vietnam story, sir.
No, that's the story of Eileen's past as a prostitute.
Oh, okay. Yacht club president.
Black eyes.
Like a doll? Like
a doll's eyes.
Beautiful woman, sir.
Well, she returned to the same old bars and friends, and Fell understandably, at 79 years old, wanted no part of this life.
Right.
And it all came to a head when Eileen beat him half to death with his own cane because, ooh, as she told friends, he only doled out money 30 bucks at a time.
Oh, you got to give him more money than that.
You beat a 79-year-old man half to death, he's already half to death. That'll kill him.
That's a quarter towards death.
Whoa.
But I would say, yeah, I mean, you're 79 years old. To be honest, you got to pay more money to have a 20-year-old bride.
Oh, that's very
true. More than 30 bucks a day?
Yeah.
You should have seen what Anna Nicole Smith was getting from her billionaire.
She was getting quite a bit of cash.
And also, well-deserved.
But think about what he got.
Yeah.
Just like
a guest gene model.
He thought that she was a living couch, though. He didn't know what she actually looked like. He just squeezed on her breast thinking that he was back in the womb.
His kids were so upset with him. But if I had a billionaire father, it's like, I don't want your money, dude. Go, yeah, get Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah, have fun. You're making it 5 more years at most. Have fun. She'll have fun. You'll have fun. Get yourself a sugar baby.
I don't
sugar
think baby. Anyone was having fun.
They were having... Did you see him eating cake? I mean, kind of getting it smeared on his face, but he was also kind of eating it.
And she was having fun until she, you know, lost her mind and started wearing clown makeup all the time.
Well, that was her...
Technically, that was her having the most fun.
Yeah. Her lawyer, Howard Stern, not the Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. He was the one to blame. Yeah. I did not like that guy.
I did not like that guy either. Anna Nicole. R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Now, after the attack, the old man learned his lesson, returned to Florida, and annulled the marriage, and Eileen never saw him again.
Well, that's what happens when you go to it never really happened lawyers.
But it wasn't all bad times for Eileen. This is a letter she wrote to Don from prison detailing a night she had on the road with one of the biggest bands of the 70s.
Say, remember the song Slow Ride by Foghat? I was in my teens, thumbing to Lauderdale off I-95 early in the evening. Comes this boss-looking vehicle, similar to this one enclosed. And guess who was picking me up? You still guessing? Good. Keep on for at least 5 more minutes. Eileen! Jeez! Okay, all right, okay. You turn the page. Now don't get jealous. It was Lonesome Dave. Lead vocals for Foghat. For real! He took me over to his place where him and basically all the band live. In Juneau Beach, Florida, this joint was huge. Like a mansion. I got so stoned with him, I can't recall how long I stayed with him. But anyway, the place was Al Capone's old stomping grounds. And it was specially equipped with a helicopter landing on top and likewise came with some more mafia tricks of the trade and the river it sat on. An underground boat entrance. And of course, I wound up going to bed with him. Typical! I couldn't help it, sis. The opportunity was there, and it was so unique. Especially with as hot of a band as they were then, I couldn't pass it up. So I did, and God was here. Small. So tiny I couldn't find it. That bad, huh? Unfortunately. Yes! it was so sad. Just so sad.
Can you imagine the humiliation of being outed of having a small dick by a serial killer?
Sad.
But you get the feeling she really did have sympathy for him for having such a small pecker.
I guess that's where the song Slow Ride came from.
Yeah. And where the name Lonesome Dave came from.
Oh, yeah. If you're the lead singer of one of the most famous bands in the world and you're still lonesome, you're no Tommy Lee, I'll tell you that.
Lonesome Dave.
Why they call you Lonesome?
Hey.
Yeah.
You know, you ever have that problem where it's like you're trying to pee, but like you just keep peeing inside your pants because it can't reach outside the fly?
I never...
Lonesome Dave strikes again.
Actually, Foghat, I found this out. They were British.
Fuck that.
I didn't know that. Can you believe that? The fucking... I just want to make love to you and Slow Ride? British!
That makes me mad.
That's us.
Can you imagine how a British man reacted to Eileen Wuornos?
Sorry.
Oh, you're a bit of a hippie-scope there, aren't you? Oh, you're right there. You're right, Rich. Where there, right? Ha ha. All right. Yeah, give it up. Hey, hey. You got something to run, eh? Ha ha. All right.
I just want to make love to you was more of a cry for help because he could.
I just want to make love to you.
Oh, man.
So by 1981, Eileen had ended up back in Daytona and was living with a man named David Watts, a 52-year-old auto worker. It was smooth sailing for about 2 months until Eileen's temper flared up, which resulted in a big knockdown dragout. Now, Eileen, thinking the relationship was over, got drunk on a good beer, whiskey, pills cocktail, put on a bikini, and robbed a convenience store at gunpoint, making off with a few bucks and two packs of cigarettes.
I'm going to make a bold prediction. Sarah Palin will do that next week.
That would be kind of hot, though.
It would be kind of hot, although, yeah.
No, she was, of course, arrested moments later, stumbling down the road drunk, but that was the plan all along. She thought that this whole stunt would cause Watts to come to her aid, pay her bail, and take her home, proving he loved her.
This is the thing, ladies. Men are not psychic. We don't know that you are just putting yourself in jail just so that we can come and bail you out and prove how much we love. Tell us. Communicate to us what you want. Ladies.
Yeah. The only problem with that is she had just committed armed robbery.
Yeah, did not think that through.
But where did she hide the money?
Just stuff it in the bikini.
Yeah.
But
she had a...
It's got to go one place.
She had a big front.
I see. It just seems like, not what you should wear while taking a bunch of money.
She called it her corrupted coin purse for a reason.
Is it Prada?
Well, that whole incident earned her a 3-year sentence for her troubles. She only served 1 year, but while in prison, she placed a personal ad in a biker magazine for which she received hundreds of replies. And upon her release, she chose a 47-year-old an engineer named Ed and hitched up to D.C. to live with him, borrowing his car to go back and forth between there and her old boyfriend David's place in Florida, usually stealing a thing or two at each place to take to the other.
Why is this? This is such a Florida relationship.
Yeah.
I don't understand the whole, like, I'm fucking my ex, but I'm living with a new dude, and we're both, like, laughing about how I'm stealing shit from my ex, but I'm still blowing my ex, but I'm taking stuff, and he's like, take whatever you want, because that's how the relationship... Florida's fucked up.
I know women have it very difficult in a lot of ways, but I do want to emphasize she had men to choose from.
Yeah.
Like, there's still always a lot of options. I'm not the best men.
But she did have a lot of options for relationships.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at this point, so now she's in her mid-20s, still kind of put together.
Yeah, she's in her mid to late 20s here, yeah. Now, and after a hellish 3 months of living with this woman, Ed finally managed to get rid of her after she drank so much one night she had to be hospitalized.
Lee, listen. I love you. I love our special bond, but you are a lot different than your biker magazine letters said you were. All right. I thought we were going to start a business together.
Right. And biker magazines, as trucker magazines are, usually people don't lie that much. They're fairly honest with their flaws.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
They're very similar to the magazines from Twin Peaks that Laura Palmer was in.
Yeah. And I had a buddy whose dad was a trucker, and he used to leave those magazines just laying around his house. They were disgusting. But, we were like 13, so we'd still look through them.
Yeah,
my father refused to allow people to swear on the CB.
Your dad was a truck driver.
And he was a preacher truck driver, and he saved a lot of lives.
I think also, but he saved lives, but the majority of preacher truck drivers take a lot of lives. I think they're responsible for more deaths than normal truck drivers.
No swearing. Let's remember that.
Now, if you haven't figured out, Eileen had a bit of a tumultuous history when it came to relationships. Here's another letter to Don talking about one of her stranger encounters.
So I was dating a couple of officers. This police officer, a John of mine, takes me over to his house, right? He wants to watch a few videos on sex. Okay with me. No problem. So we watch a few. Then he looks over me and says, Lee, you want to see one that'll really trip you? Me? Sure. So he pulls his video out from behind the TV. There's four of his buddies in uniform. Then he explains the four women are three of the officers' wives, one a girlfriend. and the department shepherd is there. The four male officers in uniform now proceed to start cornholing each other in the ass. While one's screwing a girl, then two are making out with each other, and next it flicks onto the girlfriend of the officer. She's getting bawled by a dog. I flipped out, all right. I told him to hurry up and shut the tape off. Then I just sat there with a drink in my hand, gosling down, going, God. And these are cops. Then he tells me he was the video man screening the whole thing. Oh, I started to decline dating him. And finally, I was just not seeing him anymore. Every time I saw the officers, I just wanted to spit good hawks in their faces. Sick animals. Well, seems like they ain't used to be no more, I tell you what. All right, I gotta go now. You take care. Hope to hear from you soon. For now, lovely.
Aileen was really the Samantha of her group of friends.
Yeah. I just love that story. Okay.
Bye.
I mean, that's every single story that she wrote. I mean, she would, you know, that letter that she wrote about finding the decapitated corpse on the highway, I was like, that was the time that Lee found the decapitated corpse. All right, bye.
It also seems like all scenes from The Real Housewives of Tallahassee, if that was a reality show.
And it's this weird, strange scenario that she's describing just as flippantly as anything. Like, she witnessed a
bestiality.
Bestiality, if true.
If it's not full of shit. Yeah. But at the same time, again, you remember that video.
Yeah.
Because you'd see it and be like, well, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Never put a VHS tape in unless it says Uncle Buck. And then that is actually Uncle Buck.
It's me. I was dating this cop officer, and he's like, do you want to see this video I made to really trip you out? And I was like, me? Yeah, for sure. And he put it in, and this circle showed up, and then an upside-down chair was spinning around and around, and then this crazy well. And we get a phone call later, and it's in 7 days. And I was like, what is this? All right, bye, Lee. Bye.
Now, after Ed, Aileen drifted her way back down to Florida and continued her criminal and prostitution careers. She also started carrying a gun. She was arrested for possession of a stolen pistol while driving a stolen car. Then she was arrested again for unlawful possession of a firearm. And then she was arrested for pulling a gun on a John and demanding $200.
Now we're watching her escalate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's starting to kind of get bored with herself.
Yeah.
Because that's a part of it, too. There's also the H.H. Holmes, L. Ron Hubbard now style of my lies are getting too simple and my life is too uncomplicated. I need more drama.
Yeah. Mm. And she'd also, when she was living with that Ed guy, he said that she would just sit there and talk all the time about these fantasies that she had about living this like Bonnie and Clyde outlaw lifestyle where she'd pretty much just kill and rob her way across the United States.
Meanwhile, it's like, I just thought we were going to sit, drink beers, and watch The Wheel.
Oh, I love The Wheel.
Yeah, but that's how it works with serial killers. They start that fantasy, but Aileen was verbalizing her fantasy.
Because it also validated her whole existence.
Yeah.
As that she can then erase all of the horrible shit she came from if she became a fucking, like, wandering desperado.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only thing that kept Aileen out of prison was her talent for running and her long list of aliases, which included names like Cammy Green, Susan Lynn Blahovec, and Lori Christine Grody.
Usually people give themselves aliases like John Henseman or like, you know, like Glorious Pete.
My alias is Winton Arthur Danforth III.
Oh. And she, you're such a jerk off. But she went with Grody and what was it, Blahovec?
Blahovec.
Yeah.
They call me Randy Bucketbottom.
Why, sir?
Look at my bottom.
Makes sense.
Swirling around like a big old saucy bucket of paint.
After Ed, Aileen switched over to the other side and had a brief relationship with a woman named Tony. But Aileen said after she bought Tony a pressure cleaning business, Tony ran off with the tank while Aileen was out buying booze.
Okay.
What a perfect business for a lesbian couple.
A pressure cleaning business?
Something about it. Just two lesbians just cleaning the front of a barnacle-covered building.
Why not?
But in 1986, Aileen would finally find the oddest tool to her Henry Lee Lucas and Tyra Ty Moore when the two met in a Daytona gay bar appropriately named Zodiac.
Zodiac.
It's a really cool name for a bar.
Yeah. Now, Ty had moved to Florida from Ohio, lotting out of her small hometown that wouldn't accept her as a lesbian. And for 4 years, the two would live together in spare rooms, trailers, hotel rooms, and even the woods if times were tough. But that was all right for the most part, as their favorite hobbies were shooting guns and drinking beer, which are both wonderful activities for the woods.
They're great activities for the woods. Yeah. Chasing squirrels, counting leaves.
How many leaves do you count?
I think I got five, but you know what? I don't think I can count past five.
It's always just five. Yeah, that's a hell of a time. Yeah. Beer, guns, and woods.
Yeah, man. But unlike the Henry Lee Lucas Otis Tool relationship, Ty had no real criminal record and actually made an honest living as a hotel maid most of the time.
Ty, listen, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. You know your progress report's coming up.
Yeah.
Again, you know, mm-hmm. I want to say you're doing great. The faucets have been crazy shiny.
Yeah.
TVs have been incredibly polished, dust-free. But we've been getting some letters. Are visibly covered in pine cones. and I believe, and I don't want to come at you for your sexual beliefs or your religious tendencies or whatever it is. But I believe that is a squirrel living in your hair.
Yeah.
So are we gonna do something?
You know what? Smell me.
Maple.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why the room smells so nice.
Fantastic.
Yep. Employee of the month.
But Eileen, she continued her work as a highway prostitute. She actually said when she was arrested that she hadn't held an actual job since like 1984.
But she is working her ass off, I'll tell you that.
She made fairly good money for a drifter, actually.
Yeah.
Because she said she was pulling in $300, $400 a night hooking.
Sometimes. It was either somewhere between like $20, sometimes like $300 or $400, depending.
But you have to be honest.
Yeah.
You need to have some kind of charm about you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because she's not doing it for high rates.
No, and especially in Florida, the competition is steep.
Yeah, you're talking it look like $5 a tug, right? How much would be for a tug? $10 to $20?
I think like 10 to 20, yeah.
So that's a lot of...
I mean, there's a whole list. You know, you got your tugs.
Around the world.
Upside down.
Your front backs.
Yeah.
You know, there's clowning around. There's clowning around. There's ringmastering around. There's horsing around.
Mm-hmm. You got the John Mullen. You don't want to get into the John Mullen. Oh, my goodness.
Now, although this is a huge exaggeration, Eileen said she slept with 250,000 men over her career. Now, if we do a little fuck math here, that would mean...
And is this a Common Core thing? Because I can't do Common Core.
No, it's fuck math.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, fuck math. That would mean that she would have had to sleep with an average of 35 men per day, every day, beginning at the age of 15.
She is the Wilt Chamberlain of drifters.
If Wilt Chamberlain had a vagina the size of a mailbox.
Yeah. Now, when she says that, though, is she only talking about full-on sex or maybe all sexual acts? Because I guess it's possible.
If you do
35 per night, every night.
If you just count, like, winking at a boy as a sexual act,
well, then
maybe that is.
Call me a sex offender. All I do is wink.
At boys?
Don't wink. Never wink.
Now, while Ty was pretty much Eileen's whole world, Ty would have friends from work over to whatever hotel room they happened to be crashing in at the time, and these visits invariably set off Eileen's jealous streak. Mm. Almost every friend who came over had the same thing to say about Eileen. She was outwardly friendly, but there was something mean and menacing underneath, which would come out with the slightest provocation. And we've all hung out with people like that, where they're laughing, they're smiling, they're having a good time, but you just get a feeling from them.
Psychopath.
Yeah. It's that pit bull feeling.
And you don't know what's going to trigger them because you don't know their mind.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It's always, we had a guy that would always do that where at some point in the night he was always like punching himself in the face.
Yeah. But what? So he wouldn't punch you.
He's a doctor now.
Is he really?
Yes.
Good for him.
Now, in one incident just before the murders began, Ty had a friend over to the Casa Del Mar Hotel for a Thanksgiving meal of frozen turkey TV dinners.
Ooh. Some people think that's sad, but I think that's fun.
Honestly, I think it's kind of fun.
It's way fun.
But it's fun because it's so sad.
Mm. I used to have TV dinners all the time.
See, I don't think they were having this. This wasn't their ironic Thanksgiving.
No.
Like, no, I didn't do it. I don't do it. I'll never eat anything ironically. That's ridiculous.
But I do think that because of this, they should change the name of the meal to Hungry Woman.
I agree with that 100%.
I believe Since I'm a third waiver, it should be hungry people.
You're right.
I think it should be people in need. No, hungry
people with a food deficiency. Set meals for them. They z.
We should call it glop.
Yeah.
That's it.
The friend said that Eileen seemed friendly, but didn't eat, and instead chose to just stare at her throughout the whole meal.
So, Eileen, what's your new diet plan?
I stare and wait for a goddamn reason to do something.
How you like a turkey? Salty, right?
It is good, turkey.
I love you.
I hate you. Which one?
I don't know. The turkey is good.
You want to taste my turkey?
Absolutely not.
It's here in my pants dish.
I'm going to walk out the room backwards.
Yeah, later that night, Eileen got drunk and started waving around her pistol, saying she'd shot herself in the stomach accidentally a few years back, which she in fact had.
Humble brag.
Humble. Yeah,
well, I mean, there's a lot of debate as to whether this was like a suicide attempt or if she was just fucking around and accidentally shot herself in the stomach, because she was known to just fuck around with pistols at all times, because honestly, I mean, fucking around with a pistol is pretty fun.
It's pretty fun. You just have a pair of scissors you fuck around with, and you do it all the time.
I mean, it's a lock knife and a pair of scissors and a couple of different things. Sometimes when I'm at home, I'll bring out my great-great-grandfather's pistol that has, like, three marks on the butt from how many people he's killed with it. And sometimes I'll just hold it.
Carolina, are you listening to this right now?
Yeah.
There is a way out.
Get out.
Just get out.
Get out.
Last time we were home, she held it, too.
Yes.
And she admitted that it was a lot of fun. Although, the copious amounts of guns back home did make her extremely nervous for a few days, but you get used to it pretty fast.
When you say guns, because there was a 3.5-year mandatory minimum of guns in Brooklyn, you mean Texas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mean, like, my apartment.
Right.
Yeah. I mean back home in Texas.
Good work, guys. Covering that up. Wink, wink, wink.
Well, by 1989, Eileen was no longer bringing in the numbers that she once had. She'd been living a drifter's life for about 15 years, and those years had not been kind to her looks or her demeanor.
Because you know what does not come with the drifter lifestyle? What? Moisturizer.
Oh, that's very true.
Actually, a lot of people who picked Eileen up didn't even know she was a prostitute because she didn't dress anything like one. She usually wore, like, cut-off jeans and sleeveless T-shirts.
Maybe they thought they were picking up Bruce Springsteen.
That's not even... I mean, cut-off jeans and sleeveless T-shirts, that's not even lot lizard standards.
Hey, Greg, you would not believe this. You know who I got a tug job by last night?
Who, man?
The boss!
Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, and he... is gross.
Is that what the song Thunder Road's all about? Is it about your ass?
It must have been. He was singing it the whole time.
Now, Eileen's game was to thumb a ride, make some small talk, pull out a picture of some kids, and then ask if the guy driving was willing to, quote, help her make some money.
Nothing makes me more ready for sex. A picture of someone's face.
Okay.
Now, that worked for a while, but the returns were diminishing. Because I think what she kind of counted on is that she was cute for during her 20s. Like, Eileen Wuornos was a cute woman.
And she's sassy and fun in her way.
Yeah, she's sassy and she's fun. So when she would get picked up by guys and she'd start going into, like, well, maybe you want to help me make some money. You know, guys would be like, all right, fuck it. Yeah, let's do this. Yeah, I got 20 minutes and 2 hours. Yeah, fuck it. Let's do this. But then as she started getting older, guys would be like, She was no longer an impulse buy.
Back in the day, she just did exactly what Jackie Zabrowski did to get on Roundtable. She was just cute and fun. And of course, Jackie is much superior to all the women. She's the queen of the women.
That she is.
Good cover again. Wing, wing.
Wing, wing.
Now, Eileen blamed this slowdown on, as she said, Saudi Arabia.
Yep. Kind of like how they did 9/11, but we won't talk about it either.
She's bringing in geopolitics here?
Yeah. She claimed that she lost all her regulars to the Gulf War.
Yeah.
Okay. But in reality, it was her quickly disintegrating looks and her horrific attitude that caused her sudden drop in income. Because she was also, at the same time, drunk constantly.
Yeah. Right. And if you're going to be a roadside drifter prostitute, a smile's got to be your umbrella.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wanted to be around her, and it was looking like Ty was going to join the ranks of the people who had left her. Because Ty wasn't really a drifter. She just genuinely loved Eileen, and she was just sticking by her no matter what. But after 4 years, the lifestyle of going from hotel room to trailer to woods and back was getting a little old, and Ty was starting to get a little itchy.
Yeah, it's
and
like,
Eileen knew it.
You know, it's like being married to Ted Nugent.
Absolutely. It really actually is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Foxtails and all. I just don't think we have a six-year plan. You know, and that's the problem. Sure
Where will be 5 years from now? What kind of hotel rooms and what kind of forests we'll be living in 5 years from now?
Right.
And so it was that a lack of funds and a fear of losing her lover were the possible catalysts for Eileen Wuornos's year-long murder spree, which we will cover in part two.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
She was also full of shit about Ty, too.
Yeah.
She said that Ty would go and spend all the money she was making hooking on drinking. And it's a part of, again, positioning herself so that being like, I have to kill. I have to make money. And that's what I have to do to make money.
Yeah, right. It's always like she's and she also said that, you know, Ty was pushing her to go out and go fuck strangers again. And that also it's like, well, I didn't put myself in this situation.
Right.
Ty put me in this situation. I have no choice because I mean, she is an absolute narcissist because nothing is her fault. Nothing is ever her fault. She takes no responsibility until later on she actually does,
but then takes it back again.
But then she takes it back again. However, her taking responsibility is actually more about her just wanting to die.
She did a takes backsies on taking responsibility?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She did. Well, she did a takes back. She said first that it was in self-defense, and then she said it wasn't in self-defense because she essentially wanted to get it over with. She just wanted them to fucking fry her so she could just die.
And then she did it. And then she did a double secret. It actually was self-defense. Like, at the very end.
But the whole time her toes were crossed. So do we know if she was telling the truth? That is my least favorite character trait. People who always make themselves to be the victim. I fall into that trap sometimes, so we have to be careful not to do that.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, I gotta say huge thanks to research assistant April, psychology expert Christina.
Who completely exists.
In no way is she just the carpet you're talking to.
And I've got another one that exists. Uh-oh. New forensic expert Corinne.
You know, guys, it's funny. I have a Swedish girlfriend, but every time she comes to town, you guys aren't around.
Yeah, it's weird.
There are two ships passing in the night, but she is beautiful.
Yeah, you
fun.
Always describe her almost in weird detail that almost sounds like our friend Julia Johns in a way.
Oh, strange.
But it's, but I've never met her, and I've never seen a picture of her, and I've never seen you together, and you're never doing anything with her.
Yeah,
she's
she
on
exists.
Instagram. She doesn't have a Twitter account.
Yeah. She's real.
Wow. Actually, psychology expert Christina is supposed to come to a taping of the Roundtable here in a couple weeks. If we're in town, we might be in Los Angeles.
Yeah, dog me. If
dog
we're in
me,
town,
I am going to be incredibly disturbed. I'm going to say this right the fuck now. If you show up here in the morning with a wig on, acting like Christina, we're going to have to take a 6-week break on the podcast and let things resettle.
I have no idea what you mean, Henry.
Christina! It's like she's here with us. Awesome.
Oh, and we also want to give a special shout out to our man, Jamie Johnson, who lost someone very special to him this week. Our deepest condolences. You know, we don't really know what to say, but just keep going, man.
She seemed like an incredibly sweet woman.
She did.
I hope that you're holding your shit together, man. I hope you're doing good.
Oh, yeah.
We have a mission this week.
Yes.
We're up for the Webby Award for Best Comedy Podcast. We plugged earlier today in an incredibly funny and slick way.
This is a really important award because if these tech nerds don't like us,
what will we do?
I don't know.
I don't think Clear Channel will ever get to purchase us for the millions of dollars that we deserve to be owned. But please vote for us if you haven't. Again, the offer still stands. If you can prove that you got 100 people to vote for us, I will give you a patch of my back hair in a Ziploc bag.
Did you offer that as a prize?
On the live stream.
Yeah. Really?
I did. And I will do it. But I need fucking proof.
Well, but who has to... if I have to shave you, the offer is... over.
No. I'll have another topper tier rewards ceremony where someone gets a shave.
Yeah, and we want to say thank you so much to everybody who's already voted for us. There's a few days left. Yeah.
It is genuinely going to be a close.
It's
going to be close. Like, we've been ahead for a while, but the numbers are starting to tick down just a little bit. The other podcasts are starting to make a last minute push, so we need you guys to really help us out with this and make a last minute push
as
well.
They are literally doing paid sponsorship ads, which are quite effective because they pay thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and
we're not doing that.
We're just counting on you guys, our fans, because, you know, the only reason why we're here is because of you.
Yes.
And we just go to our Twitter page at LP on the left. There's a sticky post there that you can use to go and vote.
Also, again, one more mission. Your pretty face is going to hell. It's coming back out. It's on Sundays at 11:30 on Adult Swim. Please fucking check it out. Write about it online. We're doing a big PR push. I was on fucking Opie the other day, which was ridiculous. But we're doing a lot. We're doing a lot of work. I'm really fucking proud of this work. It's like, and honestly, again, we would not be coming back for more seasons if we didn't have people watching the show. And you guys have been watching the show and being really super fucking vocal about it. And it means so much to me. It's so, please just check it out and fucking tweet about it and all that horseshit.
That's it. And check out all the shows here on CCR, Abling Us Top Hat for everything politics. I'm running for Brooklyn Borough President, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with that. You can go to BK for BK to donate, and criminal justice reform is the main thing, obviously tying into last podcast on the left. Roundtable of Gentlemen. Check that out for all your... Henry was on the last episode.
Kissel said that I could be his Steve Bannon.
Yeah. And which means you're out now.
Curl the girl.
You're back in. All right. And page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities. Movie Signs with the Mads. And what's
Wizard
the other?
And the Goddamn Wizard, yes. Bruiser.
Holden still, funny. By the way, doesn't have a day job. Still complains.
Yeah. Still complains.
Nonstop complains.
About how he can't sleep long enough because it's too light in his room later in the morning.
It's 3 p.m., Holden. It's 3 p.m. All right. Thank you guys so much for your support.
Follow us on all the bullshit. Yep. At Henry Loves You on Twitter, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel on Instagram, at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel 1, and all last podcast on the left on everything at LP on the left. Fucking hit that shit and give us money on Patreon if you want us to have that money.
Yep. Patreon.com/last podcast on the left if you feel like you deserve, if you feel like we deserve a little bit of cash. If you give just a dollar, you get advanced ticket sales to almost every single show we do. We've got shows coming up in Denver, Colorado Springs, LA, Austin, Houston, Dallas, Toronto, Atlanta, and Indianapolis. You can go to cavecomedyradio.com/live for links to tickets.
If and you give us more money, I can have more babushka.
I don't understand what that means, but for the Patreon subscribers, I got another creepypasta lined up, and it's going to be pretty scary.
Yep, and $5 and up gets all the bonus audio content.
Nice.
Very nice.
My wife.
He's a wizard of sleeve.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Geem.
Hail me, if you would, please.
And magustalations.
One and all.
Now it's time for another Last Past Guest on the Left. Shout out.
You call it Last Past Guest on the Left.
Shout out.
All right, we got to do the shout-outs here.
Thank you.
As always, thank you, everyone, for giving money to our Patreon.
Yes.
If you want to get patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left is the place to do it. It's only a dollar for a shout-out. And also, if you give a dollar, you also get access to pre-show sales for all of our upcoming live shows, which we will be announcing more here very soon if you want to see if we're coming to a town near you, including our upcoming Texas tour in Houston, Austin, and Dallas. Go to cavecomedyradio.com/live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying to do a creepypasta once a week or once every 10 days or so. The last one was a big hit. It was called Psychosis.
Ooh.
And I'm looking into some other options right now.
Thanks for your money.
Very nice, Henry. Oh, let's see here. I'll just go here. Bailey Moyers. Thank you very much. Ben Flett. Thank you. Valerie Valerie Johainen. U-I-H-L-E-I-N. Yahainen.
What do you think, Henry?
Valerie
Yulheen.
Yulheen.
Yeah.
Valerie Yulheen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Joe White. See, Joe White. Look at that. See that, Joe? Thank you, Joe. Joe White. I got that. Mark Hughes. Pod Pickering. Laura Wallace. Brandy Burkhaz. Scott Rounds. Frank Harper. Elizabeth Baseline. Anne and Jenny, Erica Bozeman, Danielle Dunn, Lisa Del Lagarza. Ooh, Lisa Del Lagarza.
Lisa Del Lagarza.
Right. Emma Rebecca, Michael Anderson, Faden, Tyler Sims, Tanner Poole, Risa Patterson, Melissa Baker, John, thank God my parents didn't name me Henry, Harold Kuntz. No, wait. John, thank God my parents didn't name me Harold Kuntz.
Yeah, so his name would be Harry Kuntz.
His last, K-U-N-T-Z. John Kuntz. Terrible
I think name. It's pronounced Kuntz.
I don't know. Maybe he's an author. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Katie Ball, Amelia Nunn, Ed Ray Allison, Tori Oxner, Chris Bilecki, Cole McKay, Blaine Tucker, Emily Rosenbach, Michael Sedeloff, Kathleen Musante, Julie Brenner, Joshua Austin, Seth Fowler, Nicholas Mozak, Meg Kennedy, Aaron Garvey, James the Long Dong Russell. It does not say the Long Dong.
It doesn't. Okay.
Kevin Murphy, Matt Winkworth, Ian Welch, Tyler Rosser, Hallen Allen, and Andrew Ferguson.
Matt Winkworth does sound like the guy who will rat you out at the office for stealing the printing paper.
Yes.
You can't trust the Winkworth.
Winkworth!
I got Diana Johnson, Noel Hackman, Kimberly Swigert.
The twin Jimmy Swigert?
No, Swigert.
Oh. Swigert.
No, not Swigert. It's Swigert.
Swigert.
Twins Mills, David Payne, Samantha Mendoza, Emma Jealous, Pontip Marshall, Maggie Bailey Wilner, Shannon Lundquist, Brittany Arledge, Cody Peterson, DC Turner, ooh, Ashley Boyer, Caitlin Rep, Chase Filarosca, Jesse Hope Weston, Trevor Carmick, Alex Lee, Rebecca Emily, Martin Soeun. Soon?
What was it?
S-O-E-U-N. Soon.
S-O-E-U-N. Soon.
Soon.
Soeun.
Soeun. Soeun.
Colin W. Clampett and Parwisa. Parisa. Parisa. P-A-R-Y-S-A.
Huh.
Parisa.
Parisa.
Clampett?
Yeah,
Clampett.
Colin Clampett.
Nice to have a sheriff around. All right. Kristen Asquiera. My tongue is tied. Asquiera?
Yes.
Kristen Asquiera. Scott. Jonathan Edwards. Corey Jordan. Hunter White. Justin Wagner. John Frostbite Curly. Ooh, why'd you get your nickname Frostbite? Inquiring minds. Katie Lapointe. Ariel Brennitz, Wesley Ratcliffe, Jordan Emerson, Georgia Lily, Lindsay, the Blue Rogue.
Ooh.
Sounds like the laziest superhero.
It does.
Lindsay, okay, Blue Rogue, Kelly Smith, Samantha C.R. Amentiaro. C.R. Amentiaro.
This is great. This is great.
C-I-A-R-A-M.
This is good radio.
I-T-A-R-O. Samantha C.R. Amentiaro.
Yep. Yes.
Jessica Poole. Thank you, Jessica. Poole. Ashera Varick. Jamie Blackband. Matt Turner. Andy Toma. Peter Gallaro. And Evan Carr. Thank you all so very much.
If you got a job at the UN, you would start World War III.
Yep.
Alex Mann. Joseph Benedict. Kristen Boehm. Justin Fintoski. Hell yeah. Austin Endrington. Alicia Mincy. Walt Hansen, Hannah Smith, Rachel Wise. Is that famous Rachel Wise?
Is that the name of a celebrity?
Yeah.
Rachel Wise? How is it spelled?
Like the celebrity.
Did she give us her celebrity?
I don't think so.
Nah.
Victor Rodionoff, Mark Krebsback, Bailey, Jane Parisi, Rachel Snyder,
ooh,
Evan Larkin, Luis Palencia, Elizabeth Arnold, Alice Martinez, Buzz Holberg.
Ooh.
Dane Schmidt. Jack.
What was that?
Jack.
Okay.
Sonia Sells.
Sonia Sells. Sonia. Sonia used to help us out a lot.
I remember Sonia. She was on Able Against Top Head, as a matter of fact.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you, Sonia.
Sarah Reach. Thank you.
I got Joshua Landreth, Howard Pina, Zachary Sweet, Alex Keller, Rebecca Doe, Amber Schievel, Emma Johnson, Alex Nouveau, Stephen Watts, P. Basta.
Ooh.
Like pasta,
but
P. Basta.
Well, that's fun.
Shelby Chamberlain, Chelsea Wilkerson, Vincent Calderon, Joseph Vogel, Max, John Zimmerman, Ryan Benderyacht, Renee Mounder, Sam M., Killian Meehan, and Nabil Shahzad.
Oh. I mean, that George Zimmerman really ruined the Zimmerman name.
He really did. It's just really that's did. Immediately where the mind goes.
He did.
I'm yeah. sorry. John
he didn't do
Zimmerman.
Good for it. Yeah.
Yeah, he did not do good.
Robert Zimmerman was Bob Dylan's real name.
No kidding.
Yep. Related.
Roe. Thank you very much, Roe. Joe Whittington, Raven Croissant, or Crescent, I believe, but I want to call her Raven Croissant, but it is Crescent. Thank you so much.
Everybody's just a carb to you.
I've been eating a lot of carbs. That's why I'm on my Hormel chili diet. Sarah Harper, Lisa Wright, Matt, Carl Mustang. Ooh, he's hairy. Yeah. Hairy, but also wet.
Yeah, wet.
Carl Mustang. Jared G. Jones, Jordan Gomke, Marie Naomi, Katie Burris Cook, Mary Balot or Below, Cynthia Amandor or Amandor, or neither of those, Aaron Bowen Zichek. I'm trying my best. Aaron Bowen Zichek, HP Loveshaft. That is. Jeremy Matthews, Carrie Sheehan, Aaron Shelton, Blake Winslow, Amanda Baird, Brianna Bierstock, DJ Maniac or Maniac.
Yeah, I've seen Manic, him around.
And Megan, thank you all so much.
Paul Rutness, Taylor McCara, Thomas Johnston, Caitlin Stewart, Madison Sage.
Wow.
Hi, I'm Madison Sage.
Hi.
You want to buy my old socks? You can suck them in your mouth. Israel Hinojosa. Rick Foster, Sarah Watson, Gabrielle Dixon, Samantha Lowe, Ka! It's just C-A. Ka!
It's K.
K. Sarah Williams, Matthew J.S. Armstrong, Taylor Erb, Stephen Woods, Sellers Webb, Troy Tempest, Troysif, Michael Barnes, Julie K., Nathan Rust, Josh Doe, Stephanie Edge, thank you so much.
Cool. I just got a couple more. Bobby Ford, Leon Hope, Jessica Anderson Simmons, Carrie Warren, and Clinton Davis.
All we right. did it again. We did it again.
Thank
again.
You guys so much for donating. It really means the world to us.
It means everything to me.
Everything.
Everything that... Everything.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail me.
Hail ye.
Hail Satan. You pieces of shit.
Muggustellations.